Hello, everybody. This is Patricia Corey. The show is Beyond the Matrix. Ah, yes, for the people who dare to think outside the box of convention. And by now, if you're listening to me, I guess that fits you, because conventionalists, I don't think, are attracted to my stuff. And certainly, well, there's always hope to convert a few people to leaping out of that safety zone and to soar with the eagles, which we're going to do today in grand style with a really special, wonderful soul. His name is Lance. He's the zany mystic. But before I bring him on, I just want to make a few announcements. please hurry up and register if you're intent on coming to Egypt. I've got a few places left, and I'm closing up this trip now. So if you're listening and you don't know what I'm talking about and you're interested, you can find out information on my website, SyrianRevelations.net. Same goes for the English trip, the crop circles and sacred sites. That one will be up on my site in a few days, and it will be high priority if you're interested, because I can't take too many people on that one. So keep your eyes posted for the sacred journeys, and come with me and explore the magic and the mystery. I invite you to share in the wonder. And I think I told you last week that I was going to start out every program with a rhetorical question, and here's my rhetorical question for the day. Well, last week's question was, do you really think a bomber terrorist who went to the bathroom to adjust his underwear to prepare the bomb to set off would then go back to his seat and try to ignite it in his seat? My new question is, this is rhetorical now, of course. We don't want to get anybody cranky. Do you think that somebody is making money on the positioning of thousands of new scanner machines in the airports around the world? Oh, yes, it's true. Investigate. You'll find that a former big shot in the government is a consultant for the company that makes them. Okay, if you start to see a little design here, answer the rhetorical question. You get a Pat Corey star on your chart. Okay, I'll stop disturbing the, you know what they call it, the shit disturbing. Didn't want to say that word, but when tribe is served, as they say. Okay, let's stop being foolish now and get on with the, oh, I'm just so thrilled to have him on. I've been on his show some time ago, and we had just a feverish conversation, two souls sharing in so much that we want to explore together, and I know the show's going to be the same. He is, as I told you, Lance White. He's a psychic healer, an author, he calls himself an exceptionally adept practitioner of question-triggered channeling. I like that. His show is called The Fireside Chats with Zany, and on the same channel, bbsradio.com. And here he is. Hi, Lance. How are you?
Hi, Patricia. I'm good. Thanks a lot for that hearty welcome.
Thank you for being here. It's about time you came on my show.
Well, it's always fun to be on the other end of the line. It's you're still talking on the telephone, but you know your mindset is entirely different.
Exactly.
You know, it's just so strange to think that you know it's the same act, but you know you're thinking in a different way. So the best thing for me is to just not think at all and just you know let it go with the flow.
That's what we're doing here on in all of the work that we're doing, I would suggest, yeah?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And flow there is, but you were saying before we got on the air that Mercury retrograde is making you crazy. What's going on?
Oh, well, geez, it seems like everything is falling apart. You know, the in the kitchen sink, I turned on the faucet, and the little aerator thing just kind of popped out. You know, mm-hmm. It woke me up for a moment, you know, because I'm not always awake. Usually I'm kind of tottering around in a daze, and then it just slammed against the stainless steel and woke me up. So I screwed it back on, and everything was jolly, and then it popped off again, and it did it three times. So I thought, well, screw this. Pardon my language, folks. I'm just going to leave it off. It's a cheap faucet. I'll have to replace it at a later date. And then I had something that was electronic go wrong, and I couldn't get access to some paperwork. And that was an easy fix. It turns out I put the battery in backwards. So I thought maybe I can't blame Mercury for that now. No, I can't. You know, one of my guests was talking about a pole shift, and he's building a boat. That's Cliff High of Half Past Human. And he's building a boat for the for when the water washes over the lands.
Oh, boy.
And I don't necessarily, I'm not necessarily of that mindset, but, you know, there are people out there that are, you know, taking the pole shift seriously, and the and it is about time for the poles to shift. The gravitational fields are gonna are shifting around. I know you can feel it, Patricia, can't you?
Yeah, I can feel a lot of things shifting around, to be honest with you, not just the poles. I feel, however, extremely excited because there is a gigantic opening now in this year of true expansion. And I'm feeling a surge in positivity, and that people say that that's strange considering all of the stuff that's coming down. But I remind people that the numbers of light workers that are just waking up, I mean, it's so much more now, it's so fast. And it's not a slow process. It's like, bam, 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 yes, I get it.
Well,
so I'm not quite worried about the pole shift because I do believe that I'm always in the right place.
Absolutely.
As I told a friend once, if we're, you know, for the survivalists out there, to be honest with you, if it comes down to hunkering down in some cave with dry beans and, you know, desiccated whatever,
right?
To then come out to what? Absolutely annihilated world. No thanks. I'll go out with a blast. I mean that in both senses. Let me have the big blast. I'm going with the woohoo.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I'm with you on that one, Patricia.
And I think that it's important for people to think about that because the more we embrace the idea that there's nothing to be saved from and there's nothing to survive, we get into the joy place of, all right, well, whatever. I came in here for a reason. And I knew what it was. I just seem to have forgotten that. But I trust that my soul knew exactly what it was doing, and I'm cool. I'm safe. I'm always safe.
Yes. And I really enjoyed your video. There was one that you did, somebody did of you in a conference in 2009. And it's clips and bits and pieces from your video. And I posted a link to it in my blog, which is here at BBS Radio. And,
thank you.
In it, you're just wonderfully starting out, and everybody's expecting you to talk about, you know, how to open your 12th strand DNA and pop out of your crown chakra, and you began it by saying the most important thing we need to address is fear.
Indeed.
And I thought that, and everything you said after that was just absolutely so right on the money. You're right on, Patricia. And
thank you,
I've been fortunate enough to read your books. I got hooked on them. Unfortunately, I started your trilogy in the middle, and I read Atlantis Rising in, I think, 2 days and just gobbled it up like filet mignon. And then, and then I had to get the next one, and it was just as exciting. And so now I've gone back and ordered the first book, and I've read Where Pharaohs Dwell, and oh my God, what an amazing journey you've had, Patricia. I mean, it's just, it was a riveting Indiana Jones kind of emotional upheaval, and for those of us who don't get to go to Egypt, as Patricia does, you take tours all over to the sacred sites, I believe. And what a wonderful gift you can give yourself by doing that, because you couldn't be in better hands than with you, Patricia. I mean, I got a direct experience of Egypt that I had never had before, and it literally took me to my knees, and I was sobbing in tears.
Oh, my God, what a wonderful endorsement. Thank you. I'm honored.
Well, it's the truth. You know, and those of us who have been working on ourselves for a little bit, you know, however long that little bit may be, it could have been just yesterday or could have been, you know, a zillion lifetimes all concurrently happening in the now, we learned that it's you have to have 100% integrity. and you can't lie or distort or manipulate or, you know, be self-serving. If you can do that, but what it does is it nails your spiritual feet to the floor.
Not only that, but you lose your joy, because that interview that you were listening to, when I tell the people, because if not, you're a con.
Yes.
And I think the most important thing that you can get out of this life is to be in absolute truth, whatever the consequences. I mean, we all say some pretty out there stuff. Sometimes we're wrong. That's fine. The important thing is to speak truth as you understand it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the Egypt book is the first time I really talk about my own experience. It's the first book that isn't channeled, although let's say that I had some help in certain chapters from the council, which a lot of people can feel, because there are some chapters where all of a sudden they're off and running about, you know, the geometric, the geographic ley lines of the planet and stuff I have help with. But basically that book is my story. But we're going to talk about your story, not mine. That's why you're here.
Right. Sorry. I'm so used to doing the interview, I might have inadvertently turned the tables on you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's nice to have a chance to promote the books. But, you know, I've got your book here, and I'm so embarrassed to say I just haven't had a chance to read it yet, because things have been a bit topsy-turvy. So your job today is going to be to talk to us about this book, The Zany Mystic, and give us some oversight into, let's start with what the book is about. What is the book about?
Well, it's an autobiographical account of my life, starting with my birth.
Okay. Now, do you remember the birth process?
No, I don't. But it's a strange thing, because about a year before I was born, my mother had given birth to another boy, and she was in the hospital. It was a Catholic hospital, and there were nuns running around in habits, as they used to do in those days. And she had done all the right things, the Spock baby books, and, you know, everything was done right. No little white cross pills, no alcohol, and so on and so forth. And she was waiting for some news of her baby. And so about an hour passed, and she stopped one of the nuns, and the nuns came in and said, she said, "Well, where's my baby?" And the nun said, "Didn't you know? He's dead." And she turned around and walked out the door. And so something in my mother probably snapped, and she probably made some decisions at that time. Number one, never have another baby, and if you do, don't get close to it. And so when I came along...
And number three, if you do, don't have it in a religious hospital.
Yes, right, exactly. Well, no kidding. We could go on about that for a long time, too. But,
yeah.
So when I came along, she didn't do that. She took the little white cross pills, and she drank and partied and had a good time. And then I came along, and what made the birth especially difficult was the fact that my mother was predominantly leaning towards being a lipstick lesbian, and my dad was a closeted homosexual. So, you know, for them to procreate and have a child, he wanted the father knows best kind of upbringing for me, but it was really a cheap version of Auntie Mame that I ended up with. So, you know, they had friends up from Hollywood that would, you know, astrological charts in one hand and a joint in the other, and men that had done Lucille Ball's hair running around in tights with their boyfriends, and, you know, studio people, and they were all crazy, wonderful, nutty, cutting-edge, laughing, having fun, partying people. So that was my childhood. And
wow.
I wrestled with my own sexuality for 20 or 30 years, and finally worked through my resistance to being a gay myself. And during that time, there was a lot of alcoholism and drug abuse and so on and so forth. And in between that, flashes of clarity and, you know, doing the EST program and the 6-day and Vipassana training and, you know, lots of different transformational things. And but in the 70s, I got involved with the Gurdjieff-Aspensky group. And it was an, quote, esoteric school, unquote. And I was in there for about 4 or 5 years, and it turned out to be a cult. And so fortunately, I woke up to that reality and got out of there in time.
Oh, fortunately.
But yes. But there are a lot of charlatans and gurus out there that are just, you know, sucking in the money to, you know, support a very lavish lifestyle. And I think that's what we see happening today, you know, with the corruption and the greed and so on and so forth. Everybody's got, you know, those at the top have most of the pie, and they're not happy with that. Well, anyway, in 1983, I was infected with the HIV virus through the hepatitis B vaccination study. And in other words, I was given the gift of HIV through...
Right.
The World Health Organization, who was doing this in New York and San Francisco, and this is documented. You can look it up on Google. But I didn't know.
Oh yeah, I've talked about that as well, and the fact that it was deliberate, and that it was, of course, so obvious. I mean, the gay community and people that were doing needle using drug users.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, hey, how, I mean, in the time of, what was it, Ronald Reagan and the moral majority, here's an idea how to reduce the populations of undesirables. Let's give them AIDS.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, as I see it, their long-range plan was to reduce the general population and then not make them so sick that they die off immediately, because then you cut out big pharma. So just sick enough to require medications, which had already been, the antidotes had already been, you know, manufactured in underground labs through black operations, wherever they do that stuff, you know, the elite gather with their frozen chambers to keep them alive or whatever. That I didn't find out until later, and I went on and on and on, and as the years passed, I thought I was going to die. So at a certain point, I mean, 10 years passed, and then I ran up all my credit cards, and I didn't die. It was then 15 years passed, and I had this mounting debt. I had to pay that all off over a period of time, and I did it again at about 20 years. I thought, well, surely I'm going to be dead. You know, I you can't live with HIV and AIDS longer than 20 years. Come on. So I ran up all my credit cards again and got a mounting debt.
Oh, God, not
smart. And, you know, so then that didn't work. And so then I figured, well, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go with a smile on my face. And so I started doing crystal meth in San Francisco. And I, for whatever reasons, because I'd been a good business person, involved in, you know, corporations and so on and so forth, working my way through the accounting world, I ended up running a methamphetamine business. And shooting up meth on a daily basis. So this went on for about 3 or 4 years, because I thought, well, I'm going to die with a smile on my face. In the meantime, I wasn't getting any medical care, and my T cells apparently were holding their own. So I thought to myself, well, all that stuff they tell us, those belief systems about you can't do this and you can't do that, that's all phony baloney. You know, there certainly are exceptions to the rule. And so eventually I had somebody who had come over, and he went into a trance, and he was quite psychic. We'd been talking for some time, and I thought, wow, this guy is really, you know, he's in touch with other realms. And I had always, even when I was, you know, doing drugs, I was doing research and, you know, experimenting with, you know, spirit work and so on and so forth. I know that sounds contradictory, but it can happen. I don't advise it, mind you, but that was my experience. So he went into this trance and he said, I'm an angel and I'm here to warn you. And I got the hair on my head stood up, on my arms, and I was just deathly silent. And I was told that, first of all, I needed to... He couldn't just tell me what, he couldn't blurt it out. In other words, he couldn't give me information unless I asked for it. And I thought, well, this is an interesting game. I'll play it. And so he would hint, and then I would ask a question. Well, come to find out, he said I would be in 3 long-term programs, and I would be arrested twice for methamphetamine. And long story short, we got to map out some kind of scenario that something bad was coming. And so then he came out of the trance and didn't remember what he had said or where he had gone, and we continued on after that. Well, within a week, I was arrested the first time and taken to jail, and I met a guardian angel in jail who carried my mattress for me, and then I was released, miraculously got out on a felony charge, and then I couldn't hold it together, and I went back to my old ways, and I was arrested a second time, and this was a little trickier. I couldn't. You don't really want to flaunt your illness in the court, because somebody's going to take it and run with it, and they did. They wanted to put me away for life, and so I didn't know this, and I ended up in some of the worst jails and institutions on the planet. And believe me, it's an eye-opening and awakening experience. Read my book if you want to find out. All of the things that he said came true. Everything took about 5 years for that little brief conversation that we had to evolve, but it all came true, whether or not it was suggested. When I asked him why he was there telling me this, he said, I'm here to give you some hope during the times that are approaching. And so, you know, of course, a lot of this went over my head. Well, when I got out and spent a year in a live-in program and got my act together and started, you know, pulling my life back into shape, I wanted to write a book about my experiences to help other people. And so I moved back to my house up in Placerville, and it took me 3 or 4 years to get the book written, but eventually I did do it.
Okay, hold on. Wait, let me interject something here.
Yeah.
What point we're talking about now? What is the time frame you're in? What year?
This was 2002.
So you have now had HIV for how long?
Well, for 23 years, I think. As of 2010, I've been living with this, and I have a diagnosis of AIDS, permanent AIDS, I'm disabled, of 27 years.
But you're, but you're not taking medication?
Yes, I finally decided that if there were enough medications out there to select and fall back on, that I would explore doing medication. And when my T-cells hit 160, I thought to myself, you better start looking into this. You may have gotten through 4 years of drug use and partying and not eating right and not drinking enough water and staying up all night for 4 years, but you're still alive and you're going to be alive for whatever reason, and you owe it to yourself to find out, you know, what that is. And so part of that I saw was the writing of the book, and so it's been 27 years. Living with HIV and AIDS, I still have a bit of a feeling of the other shoe is going to drop, but not nearly like I used to, because my views about the soul being in a continuum has changed. You know, from thinking that we don't have one, you know, we just die and that's it, to feeling that there is no such thing as birth, there is no death. We are eternal and infinite fragments of the God self, the all that is, and so on. It's whatever you want to call it.
You're speaking my language.
Yeah, and we will reunite with our higher self or our oversoul, and all of that's managed from a higher level. You know, whether you want to say fifth, higher density or higher dimension. And as I see it, from reading your books and all the research I've done and the guests I've talked to, we're headed for some major shifts into higher densities, out of polarity and duality, and away from the lower negative vibrations that are trying to control and enslave us.
Indeed. I'll say a whole great spirit to that.
I thought you might.
And I like you saying trying, because so many people are using this word, these expressions of we are slaves, we are beaten, we are, and I'm just, we don't have to be that.
No.
Big time now for the whole race to start thinking clearly, refusing to be slaves, refusing to be beaten, refusing to be afraid, so we can turn this puppy around. And
oh, absolutely.
We will.
And part of that has to do with, as you said, it begins with, you know, confronting our blockages, which is keeping the energy from flowing freely. And what I see happening with so many people are our insecurities are just keeping, they're weighing us down like lead balloons, you know, our feeling that we're not good enough or we're not worthy or what we know is, well, I really don't know anything but I do believe that, you know, and we justify everything. We're afraid to say what we think. We're inner-considering about other people. And everybody's doing it. Everybody's in their head thinking that they're the worst person on earth, that, you know, we don't
deserve to be not everybody.
Well, not everybody. You're right. That's an absolute. But a lot of people are.
A lot of people are, yes.
A lot of people. And we need to move out of that and learn how to face that and work through that so that we can get to a funner, more fun, higher place.
I think we have an opportunity here at the onset of 2010 because it feels like show and tell time.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, yeah, I was just, you know, I allow myself about 10 minutes of news a day so that I am abreast of the major issues. And I'm going to write an article, which is The War on Everything.
Ah.
So it's just going to be let's stop with the facade of the war on terror. It used to be the war on drugs. It's the war on everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The war on every country. The war on every freedom. It's
yep.
the big war on everything. I'm sure there's an article here. I'm going to try to write that over the weekend.
Oh, good,
but aside from being facetious, it is just it really feels that now it is really make or break time
yep.
for human consciousness.
Absolutely.
The screw is turned to the max, and what are we going to do about it?
Absolutely. And when you mention the war on everything, I mean, we could go down that road and talk about chemtrails that have been going on for a decade or two, the shadow government, genetically modified foods, the poisonous water, mercury, aspartame, and, you know, a laundry list of things, nanobacteria on the meats, you know. It just goes on and on and on, and it's like an octopus whose tentacles reach so deeply into our lives that we feel as if we've lost our power. And you said it really well, that this is the year when we regain our power, and there's a new inrush of energy that is embracing us and showing us that it doesn't have to be that way. We're not enslaved. We have the choice to be free, and we just have to simply turn that switch and start living it.
Yeah, I wanted to add, you see, the thing is, to that list that you just made, I wanted to say we have also crop circles. We things appearing in the sky. We have sightings all over the planet. We have the most incredible animals. We have so much love. We have so many people waking up on this planet.
Yes.
We have got, as dark as that dark agenda seems, hey, man, the light agenda is as brilliant as that darkness is dark. And
yes.
We've got to focus on that.
Yes, yes, absolutely right.
So, you know, it's very easy to get sucked into that downward spiral of, you know, sometimes it's just like, really, it is just too much.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But we can't allow ourselves, without wanting to be, you know, optimistic hippie derelicts, which is
right.
What my brother once called me affectionately. he called me a hippie derelict. I thought that was the greatest compliment.
Yeah, it is.
We don't want to be runaway optimists with no grounding. Otherwise, we have no credibility. But
right.
Truthfully, there is so much to be positive about. It is still a beautiful world.
Yes.
There are still so many discoveries to be made on this planet. So much is happening. We're so close to absolute breakthrough of all the end of our orphanage on this planet.
Yes.
So
and it,
how do we
yes.
shift enough people into that mindset so the waves of consciousness that roll around the planet are, yes, 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 we're on track.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, we have a lot of help. And we have, you know, I'm glad you brought up the ET aspect. You know, we think of, in general, it seems that most people think of that as kind of a little bit on the loony side. But even though I've never actually experienced it for myself, I have that intuitive connection with some kind of presence that's out there. And I feel that there's a vast ET alliance. And you channel the Assyrian High Council, I believe.
Yeah.
And people like Marciniak have been channeling the Pleiadians, and many others have kind of gone along the way and opened our minds to this higher information, which we can now access. The world is full of beauty. I had a friend just write me a Christmas card, a belated Christmas card, and she, on the front was a picture of an orb that she took. She's gotten into orbs. I haven't talked to her in a year. And she's just going crazy about these orbs. And this picture, it's like a 20-foot arch. It looks like a McDonald's arch. And she said it just flashed right in, as she had her camera handy. And she took the picture, and it was like this brilliant flash of light in these tubes. I mean, it's absolutely magnificent. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
And can you send me a copy of that?
Yes, I can do that. I will do that.
I would love to see that.
And she's got lots of pictures, and I said, well, you know, Randy, maybe you should be on my show and we should get all this information out there, because I've seen little bubbles floating in the air and, you know, various patterns, and a lot of my guests talk to extra-celestials and so on and so forth. So my mind is open to all of that stuff, and needs to open further. I need to keep opening it. And this is really an exciting time when we can get to communicate, as you said, with the crop circles. What a wonderful gift that is that you're bringing to all of us, because I can't get to England. And your enthusiasm and your communication about these wonderful communication devices is really thrilling. You know, it's just thrilling to know that we have a lot of help. It may look like the dark T-shirts are winning, but the white T-shirts are not necessarily making themselves known. We don't see them as clearly because they're a little smarter and they don't come out and reveal themselves as rapidly so that they can be gobbled
up. Well, it's not only that. It's because they're not, you know, the light is not that marketable on the media.
Right. Right.
In fact, you know, as an author of alternative information, the mainstream media just is not interested.
Oh, not only not interested, it's thoroughly controlled.
Exactly. So it looks like one of the reasons why it looks like the dark side is winning is because they control the media.
Right.
And so our daily bread is the deliberate information highway of the extremely horrible. Well, Woody Allen made a movie once, I think it was Played Against Sam, where he's walking down the street with his friend, and he says, I basically see the world in two categories, the horrible, the terrible, which is war and rape and destruction, and the extremely horrible, which is everything else.
I love Woody Allen. What a brilliant genius mind.
Especially in those days. But, you know, it's true. I mean, the news is the terrible and the extremely horrible all the time, because the wonderful, the blissful, the celebration isn't news. People are bloodlusting for bad news.
Yes. And that's...
It's a form of entrainment.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that's going on at many levels. Without our awareness. There are all kinds of frequency controls that are going on. And, you know, you can look at HARP if you want to. I don't care to look at it too closely, thank you very much. But there's a lot going on with that, and it's interconnected with the ascension of our solar system. So we're completely surrounded. You know, it's almost like Indians and what is it, where they have the covered wagons and the
cowboys and Indians.
Yeah, that's it. And it's we're surrounded, but you know what? We are in a circle, and we're not going to be divided because our circle is getting stronger and we're pushing out. And I think at some point all of that will just burst like a bubble, and it will just crumble and fall apart like a, you know, an old dead thing.
Well, I like to teach people that I used to tell people to love George Bush, and people would cringe, and I used to say, look, love this guy, because he is transparent. He's bad enough for the world to wake up, and he is. This is the delicious irony of the universe.
Yeah.
He was one of the worst characters in history.
Oh,
but he was one of the most effective to awaken the most amount of people in history because he was so bad.
Yeah.
He was just ridiculously caricature like bad that enough people said enough already.
Yes.
Whereas our new character came in with all this hope and change, very insipid. And only now people are going, And I was like, you know, back in the days when we were hearing that he was from the ninth dimension, I had to deal with these emails coming around that he was from the ninth dimension, and he was one of the great ascended walk-ins. And I'm like, are you talking about the same dude that I'm watching on the TV using basically a vocabulary of three sentences? Are we so gullible? Let's get George Bush back where we were alert.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So,
and as you know,
how complacent we become when the talk is slick.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could never, of course, blame George Bush for being a slick talker.
No, but they had some pretty effective techniques, and they just kept using them over and over and over. And fortunately for us, that's not working for the Republican Party. Even though there isn't really, there aren't two parties in this world.
There are
There's
no
only
parties.
One.
Yeah, I think we're
it's
over
called
that.
The...
But what I was starting to say before I got off on the track was that as 10 years ago, they were more dangerous than they are now. And people say, how can you say that? I mean, the situation has become so much worse. No. The situation has become so much more clear.
Ah, yes.
So it's the hidden that's the danger.
Yes.
And when the Syrian revelations first came out, they were revealing the hidden agenda.
Yeah.
But now, so much of it is out. They're brazen.
Oh, yeah.
They're just out there running their programs, fearful themselves. And this is the Achilles heel.
Yeah, yep.
People have to remember that they are scared to death that we are going to wake up and get off of our knees of obedience.
Yes.
Because when that happens, and it is.
It is.
No technology short of a nuclear holocaust is going to stop the wave of humanity.
Absolutely right.
So I am fearless.
Yeah, exactly. Once you lose your fear of death, that kind of puts you in a different category. You know,
it does indeed.
You know, it really does change the playing board. It equalizes it out a lot. And in fact, you rise above the fray. And you're no longer in the lower third dimensional negative polarity archetypes. You've moved out of that, and you can see clearly. We may not be thoroughly awake yet in full consciousness, but we can see, and some of our rose-colored glasses have been removed, and we can actively then look to see, well, gee, if this is going on, what else is happening that I don't know about? And there's a certain point where you get saturated with information, and you have to kind of, like you said, you know, don't go down that road too much further. It's like a bottomless pit, and it's a Pandora's box. But occasionally you do have to dip your finger in that dark inkwell and see what's going on. And be
well, sure, because if you gather information and it empowers you,
yes,
then gather away.
Oh, absolutely.
If you instead keep acquiring more and more of it and come away with a feeling of hopelessness, then you've only served their agenda.
You've been eaten.
That's right.
You're just food for the for those
the
that
bee.
Would eat your energy. And and it is really a matrix-like situation. Our energy is food for those that would control us. And especially our negative emotions, which are not real, That is what they live off of. So it's like filet mignon. Just like we eat steaks and champagne, you know, on a good day, there are entities that are manipulating and controlling and interfering and so on and so forth that have been for thousands and thousands of years. And they're masters at the art of keeping us divided, conquered, and fighting amongst ourselves, and feeling that we are powerless. And then, of course, you've got the machinery in operation that just grinds us up and spits us out. And then, you know, we might as well be living in the Matrix. So,
what do you think about all of the vampire fascination? Have you noticed there's about 8 different shows and movies about vampires?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of them coming out right now.
I find that extremely interesting because it's designed to appeal to teenagers and young people.
Mm-hmm.
And has created a number of cults of bars and clubs where people are actually drinking each other's blood.
Yes, I saw some of that. Yeah. Yeah.
That is some very heavy stuff, considering blood is the transmitter of disease, for starters.
All right.
And I really advise people to tune out of that real fast.
Yeah.
Because they make it cute enough that, you know, the cute little hunky vampire guy and
mm-hmm.
a little love story between him and his vampirette. But I would really like to just, I know this is a little bit off the track, but to all of you who are listening, see if you can get your kids away from those programs. And if you are a kid, see if you can get yourself away from those too, because there's a lot of subliminal stuff going on there.
Oh, absolutely.
To bring you into that reptilian mindset.
Yes.
You agree?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And the ironic part is there's enough truth in it that they are the vampires. So they're right out in the open, and they're sexualizing everything. Everything is becoming sexualized, and they're turning all of this into games. Look at all the horrendous war games and killing games and dark games there are out there right now. It's really quite horrifying. And kids are just soaking that up like sponges. Some kids, not all kids. You know,
well, it really is a big job for parents out there. I don't have the privilege of being one, but you've got a big task before you if you are a parent to find a balance where a child isn't isolated from reality, because you can't get them away from it anyway. I mean, you can't keep them away from it because it's everywhere. It's the schools or whatever. But to instill a new direction for children to seek higher ground, that is the task of parents today.
Yes, yes. And I would add to that, you know, there's a great deal of wisdom in shutting off your appliances, your television, your radios, microwave ovens. Don't use microwave ovens. I don't want to get into that right now, but, you know, shut these things down, because all of this sensory input is taking up the space of our own intuitive processes, and we can't even hear ourselves. We can't hear the voices that are trying to come through because we're so stuffed full of information, bad information, and hypnosis and brainwashing to buy this and consume that, and the world, it looks like this, and everything's fine, that we don't have any room for ourselves to flower. And, you know, it's really vital that you have space and time, preferably in nature if you can do it, where there aren't any of those vibrations. And I'm graced with living in the country. I'm looking out at foothills, and there's a river at the base of the foothill, and there's pine trees. I have a few cats that come around. I feed the birds, and they'll do a little dance. It's like a little show for me. I have a hummingbird that comes around every day. So those are the things that really connect you to and ground you to the beauty of the spirit of everything.
Yes, I agree completely. I'm also out here in the country, which at the moment is filled with massive rain. But even the rain, I love the rain and the smell of the earth after it's poured, and the little life starts to peek its way through the cracks.
Yeah,
and I feel for children who don't get a chance to get their hands on the earth and make a mud pie dirty in the garden. And wow, how sad is it to be locked up in a condo with 12 computer screens on in the house and video games and telephones and come on, man.
Yeah, it's really frightening.
Let's get back in touch with the earth.
Yeah, yeah. One of my greatest joys as a kid was just making mud pies.
Me too.
And being outside talking to my little invisible friends, and you know, a brick was turned into a mansion, and I drew little driveways and have cars coming and going. And you know, the world of imagination is such a wonderful place to visit.
Oh yeah, we put mud pies too. We had different kinds. We had the mud pies with the little geranium flowers on them. Those were cherries.
Yeah, yeah.
And we
had some, and with grass.
Yeah, great
yeah,
time.
Different
great,
flavors.
I had a great time.
Yeah, it was fun. And, you know, we were lucky because we're of the age when, just as the television and radio was kind of going out, and I was born in 1950, which is when the first IBM UNIVAC computer was turned on. It was the size of a house. And, you know, obviously in a short span of my lifetime, things have certainly come a long way, but we really have been kept in a technological narrow band of development, and all the higher technologies that have been developed secretly, privately by corporations and the shadow elite, we don't get to play with those things. I mean, there's a base on the moon, there's a base on Mars, there's anti-gravity, there's time travel. Anything that you can imagine on Star Trek is already happening here on the planet. And we're
Some of it is already obsolete.
Thank you. So they just throw us a little toy once in a while through the corporations that can be marketed and sold, and everybody will buy it. And, you know, they just kind of dribble a little bit out, and that is what we are tolerating. We should have had flying cars by now that were energy-free. And what do we have? We have these boxy things that get 20 miles to the gallon. Come on, you know, when are we going to wake up and stop using nuclear fuel?
Come on, interjection here. Do we really want flying cars?
Well, I don't care about flying cars, but you know what I mean.
Oh my God, flying 6 billion flying cars without
But technically speaking, we could have had the technology to have, you know, all kinds of super cool things by now. And we were stuck in this kind of antediluvian mindset that, well, this is just the way it is. You know, come and get your new Chevy just like the old Chevy, except it's boxier and it gets less gas mileage, and we've improved the gadgets a little bit. But it's all
and we're making more profit on it.
It's a racket.
Yeah, what do you foresee for 2010?
Well, I think this is going to be the year of the Great Awakening, and we've seen a little bit of this happen already, but there's going to be an uprising, or an upwising, as Swami Beyond Ananda likes to say, of the people, because we've reached a crucial point where we've almost got that 100th monkey washing the yams or the potatoes by the river. And when all of the monkeys instantaneously connect and have the same information to go on, we will see clear. Everyone will see things truthfully, whatever that is. We'll be able to see through the illusion, and it will no longer be hampered by all those distortions that keep us asleep. So I think this is going to be a year of a great awakening and a push back to the bankers. I mean, I see there's a whole movement about move your money. You know, on Huffington Post, there's Arianna Huffington is talking about we don't like what the bankers are doing. Draw your money out of these various banks, you know. Pull the rug out from underneath their feet if you have to.
And what do you do with the money when you pulled it out? Not that I have that problem.
Put it into a credit union, a local bank that's run by people that you know that are raised in the area. You know, we have a little bank down here called El Dorado Savings, and they're wonderful people, and the bank is well managed. But there are also credit unions springing up, or just stick it in a safe or under your mattress. I mean, for crying out loud, if money is that important to you, then you're on the wrong track anyway.
Oh, that touche on that. That's why I don't have any money saved up.
I don't either.
It's the funniest thing because, again, my brother said, you know, when are you going to get yourself a nice portfolio? And I say, I've got one. And he says, well, great, what is it? What are you working with? And I go, well, I've got pictures from Tibet from 1996. I've got pictures from Peru. And he goes, no, I mean your financial portfolio. And I say, hey, bro, all I've got is this. My portfolio is the pictures in my mind.
Yeah.
It never loses value. Nobody can steal it. And I'm always safe with it. Because
right
when I walk
on.
Away from my body at the end of my days, what I'm going to see running through that tape that everyone sees is the splendor of all of these incredible moments in life.
Yeah.
And I have nothing to worry about because when the market crashed, I didn't lose anything.
Right.
What a joke.
Yeah. And, you know, ironically, I think that the people who will fare really well are going to be the homeless, the those who are used to dumpster diving in the cities. They're going to be well prepared for any kind of collapse that occurs. And I do think that there will be some kind of global financial collapse because it's inevitable. There's a real estate bubble about to burst, and the banks are up to their old tricks with bundling up their fancy mortgage obligations and selling them off all over the world. I mean, they just won't stop. You know, a little slap on the hand is not going
to
do it.
I'd like to add to that, because unfortunately we're out of time already. Yeah, it's gone. I can't believe it. But based on what Lance just said, remember, unburden yourself as much as you can with all the debt and the wasteful spending and all of these traps that you get into so that you feel like you cannot afford to lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of it all as much as you can.
And
strip down to a humble life where you can be comfortable in the wake of any kind of change. And get on with the job of exploring what it means to be a perfect being, a beautiful soul who came in here to have a wonderful experience, guys. Get it? And with that, I've got to say goodnight, Lance. Too fast. You'll have to come back because talking to you is just like a blur.
Well, it was great fun for me, Patricia, and a great honor, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. Please give us your website so people can come and check you out.
Oh, well, I don't have a website. I've got a blog here at BBS.
Okay.
And my book is called Tales of a Zany Mystic, and it's available at www.amazon.com.
Okay. And what is your blog? How do people find you on BBS? What time is your show on?
Well, at the very bottom of the home page, there's some people who have written newsletters and various other things. I'm the very last one at the bottom, and it's called, I don't know what it's called, but it's a Fireside Chat. And I
Fireside Chat, that'll do. I'm sure people can find you that way.
Yeah.
All right, Lance, I have to say goodbye because otherwise my producer will
yes,
get
I
cranky.
Know.
You know him. Thanks again, and everybody, please be sure to tune in next week. I've got Stephen Bassett from ExoPolitics back on. We're going to be talking about disclosure again and see if we can get this right. And the videos that Lance was referring to are, I've got two or three up now, video interviews with, well, two are with freedomcentral.info, great people who are doing good work. Please come and check them out on YouTube by Googling Patricia Corey or by going to freedomcentral.info and see what comes through in those videos. All right, you guys, I thank you for being here. I'm sorry I'm rushing to the finish here, but that's the way it is when you talk to people like Lance. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, Lance. I am your sister. Goodbye, everybody. I'll be
Love you,
next
too.
Week. Love
Bye-bye.
You. Take care.